Monday, the 10th of April, 1724, was Bach's first Easter Monday as Thomas Cantor. One would have expected Bach's first Easter Monday to have warranted a specially written cantata, but this was not to be. Practical constraints, rather than artistic ideals, reigned that year, and the cantata performed on this second Easter day in 1724, Erfreut euch ihr Herzen, BWV 66, was recycled from a work Bach had written 5 years earlier for the birthday of his employer, Prince Leopold of Anhalt-Köthen. The following year brought a different set of circumstances. The Bach family had increased by one, and the arrival of Anna Magdalena's third child was imminent. The first flush of enthusiasm for his new job was wearing off, as Bach found himself, not for the first time in his career, in conflict with the authorities. He decided to revise the St. John Passion for Good Friday 1725, but still had time to prepare two new cantatas for Easter. Easter Monday, the 2nd of April, 1725, saw the performance of the newly written Bleib bei uns, BWV 6. But Bach was more than a pragmatist. He was, in one sense, also a preacher, expounding the biblical text musically and inviting his congregation to respond. The utter exuberance of the opening chorus of BWV 66 from the year before could hardly be more different from that of BWV 6. Yet both of these cantatas were written for identical occasions. It is Bach's exposition of the different readings that accounts for the contrasting moods. BWV 66 is based on the epistle of the day, which bristles with Peter's raw energy as he boldly testifies to the death and resurrection of Jesus and to the forgiveness now available to everyone who believes. It was the gospel reading of the day that Bach chose to set in this cantata, BWV 6. Luke 24 is an account of the meeting of Jesus with the disciples walking along the road to Emmaus, and Bach focuses on the disciples' yearning for Christ to remain with them. As if to enable his listeners to relive the disciples' sorrow, he set the opening chorus, Bleib bei uns, in the same key and triple meter as the final haunting chorus, Ruht voll, of the St. John Passion they had heard just 3 days earlier on Good Friday. The plea, Bleib bei uns, had a deeper meaning for the composer, as he experienced his first serious conflict in Leipzig and contemplated the impending confinement of his beloved Anna Magdalena. The atmosphere in the Leipzig churches of Bach's time cannot really be reproduced. As we sit in comfort and experience the perfection of professionally performed cantatas, we can only imagine how Bach's works were received. The bells had rung. The city had come to a standstill. Communicants had fasted. The liturgy had already lasted over an hour. The text booklets were opened, and the music began. Words of Ruth Tatlow. We'll have a chance to experience the music of Bach in comfort, yes, but the power and the grandeur will always be there. The Arcadia Chorale will present the 32nd annual Northeast Pennsylvania Bach Festival this Saturday and Sunday, March 25th and 26th. The Bach Festival is a celebration of the music of J.S. Bach and his contemporaries and is a highlight of the musical calendar. Dr. Stephen Thomas is music director and conductor of the Arcadia Chorale, and he paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the 32nd annual Northeast Pennsylvania Bach Festival.
This year's Bach Festival, like it has been most years, is three concerts over 2 days. As we generally do, as we have, I think, always started with an organ concert on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock, then Saturday evening with a nice little break for dinner. We have our chamber music concert at 7:30, and then the following day on Sunday, the 26th of March, we have our choral music concert. And it's always, I think, a wonderful weekend for lovers of music, especially those that love Baroque music. But, you know, we get enough variety in the weekend that it's certainly not just Bach, and not even just Bach and his contemporaries. There's Bach and contemporaries and other people that we kind of work into the mix there. So the first concert is the organ concert. And every year we feature a different guest artist that we bring in, sometimes someone who's local, sometimes someone who's not. This is a not year, unless you count New York City as local. We're bringing in an organist who's based in New York City. His name is James Kennerly. He's an organist. He's also a conductor and a singer and a composer, although we're only making use of one of those, the organist part, on this event. He has a very impressive resume. He's played at many major venues throughout U.S. and Europe, Washington National Cathedral, St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York, Westminster Abbey. So some, you know, very prominent places he has performed. He has degrees from the Juilliard School, from Cambridge University. He was an organ scholar at Jesus College at Cambridge University. So he is excellent. We're very excited about bringing him in to do this concert. Also, interestingly, he has a particular interest in a historical performance. And that's, you know, a nice connection with the Bach Festival. I think a lot of organists, of course, are interested in the music of Bach, which would fall under that. But he does have that particular interest, which is kind of a nice added bonus. He's sort of starting off with a bang. He's starting off with the Fantasia and Fugue in G minor, BWV 542. This is the great G minor, it's called. It's one of my all-time favorite organ pieces. I have, you know, attempted to kind of play at it a little bit. I almost probably shouldn't admit that on the air, but it's just, for me, it was kind of a way to get into the piece a little bit and try to understand it and see how it works. And it's just, it's one of Bach's masterpieces. So he's starting off, like I say, starting off with a bang, a very dramatic way to open a program. And then he's going to play three of the Schubler chorales. There's six of them. So these are, again, by Bach. And they're transcriptions for organ of movements from Bach cantatas. There's six of them. Five of them, they know the cantata still exists. They know which cantata it came from. One of them, they assume that it came from a cantata because the other ones did, but they don't know what it came from. A number of Bach's cantatas are lost. So the assumption is that it came from one of the cantatas that unfortunately we no longer have. But there's a nice connection here because one of the pieces that he's doing comes from a cantata that we're actually singing the next day. We sort of talked about that, and it's always, I think, fun to make connections like that between the programs, and so it's great that we're able to do that, and he's willing to play that piece. So that's Ach, bleib bei uns, Herr Jesu Christ. It's transcribed from the third movement of Cantata 6, which we're doing on Sunday. So he's not, however, limiting himself to Bach. We often ask the organists to go sort of farther afield. Just about every composer after Bach was influenced by Bach on the organ because he's such a towering figure in organ composition. And so pretty much the organs can do anybody after that and it'll fit in some way, you know, some kind of connection to the Bach theme of the weekend. So he's actually doing a piece by Mozart. Mozart wrote some pieces for organ, and this is one of a couple of works that Mozart wrote that were originally written for a mechanical clock organ. So it'd be kind of interesting, I think, to hear this and imagine it being played not by a person, but by a mechanical clock. But it does show, in its counterpoint in particular, it shows the influence of Bach. You know, Mozart certainly knew Bach's works and studied them, and so that's a nice connection. And then after that, there are two more pieces, both written in the 20th century. One is by a Dutch composer who is new to me. So this is wonderful when other people pick music, you know, and I like, oh, I get to learn things. And composer is a Dutch composer. His name is Ad Wamis. I think I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. And the title of the piece is Miroir, or Mirror. And it's very different from the Bach pieces and the Mozart piece. It's sort of this hypnotic piece. It has this sort of this quick repeating pattern, the plate in one of the hands, and then the other hand and the pedals play other things sort of to vary it. And it's very sort of this shimmering kind of thing. So it's very, very different than the others, which is actually, I think, a very smart programming choice because it then kind of clears the palette in a way. It goes in a very different direction in terms of the sound space. And I think will be kind of a nice diversion, nice break. There's something different on the program. And And then the other more modern piece from the 20th century is by Canadian composer Healy Whillen, who wrote a number of works, a lot of works actually, for the organ. And this is a monumental piece and maybe his masterwork for organ. It's one of his great works for organ. It's called Introduction, Passacaglia, and Fugue. And it actually makes a wonderful bookend with the huge Bach piece in the beginning and this piece on the end. It's nice way to frame the concert. So it's a wonderful program, and I am very much looking forward to hearing him play.
And where will we be?
That concert is at Elm Park United Methodist Church in Scranton. So that's the first concert. And now on to the second concert, the chamber music concert, which is that same day, but in the evening. So the organ concert is in the afternoon at 4 o'clock. This is in the evening at 7:30. As we do every year, we feature members of the Arcadia Festival Orchestra. And this year, we actually feature a variety of chamber ensembles, all the way from a duet, two players, all the way up to a solo with the orchestra. So we have actually a duet, a trio, and a quartet, and then a solo with the orchestra. So the duet is Mozart's duo in G major for violin and viola. This is played by Peggy McAdams and Jeffrey Ellenberger, two of our players in the orchestra. And this duet actually has a really interesting story, I think. It's Mozart, who wrote it, was friends with Michael Haydn. Now, Michael Haydn is the younger brother of his more famous brother, Joseph Haydn. But he was also a composer and wrote some wonderful music. He actually wrote a requiem that Mozart knew very well. And in fact, if you listen to them side by side, you sort of say, hey, he got this idea from, so interesting links between those two pieces. But anyway, Michael Haydn was a friend of Mozart, and he had a commission to compose a set of six duos for violin and viola for the Archbishop of Salzburg, who was his employer at the time and was Mozart's former employer. So he kind of knew what this guy was like. And Michael Haydn had written four out of the six, but he was then taken ill and he wasn't able to complete the other two in time to complete the commission. So Mozart, helping out his friend, he stepped in and he composed two to help him finish the commission. One in G major, which is the one that is on our program, and then another one in B flat major. So that's kind of a neat backstory about this piece. And of course, these are wonderful pieces, and it's, I think, an interesting compositional challenge to write for just two instruments. And so it'll be interesting, I think, for everyone to hear how Mozart dealt with that issue. Then we have the trio, and the trio is the latest in a series of arrangements by Tom Heintz, who is artistic director of the chamber program. And he has taken, like I say, it's a series. He's gone through the Bach trio sonatas for organ, and he's arranged them for instruments. And so we've actually done a number of his arrangements on the chamber program over the years, and they are fiendishly difficult to play on the organ because essentially there's these three different parts that you have to keep going in your two hands and feet, and they're very independent lines. But of course, that makes them work really well for individual instruments. So that's what Tom has done. He's actually sort of decomposed them in a way, taken them and set them for different instruments. In this case, he's given the lines to oboe, which Tom is playing, viola, which is played by Harold Levine, and cello, which is played by Gail Klaber. So again, these are musicians wonderful musicians that we have at our disposal that are, in the orchestra. So that's the trio that Tom has arranged from a Bach trio sonata. And then we have a quartet. Now this is, in terms of time and style, a little bit of a departure. It's much closer to the modern era. It's composed by Gabriel Fauré. It's his string quartet in E minor. It's the last work that Fauré wrote. He wrote a pretty good amount of chamber music over the course of his career, but he never tried to do a string quartet. He always kind of shied away from that. He was like, he felt the influence and the sort of shadow of Beethoven, which many composers did. And he was pretty leery of sort of going into that genre. But eventually he did tackle it at the end of his life. His health was failing. He decided it was time to write this piece. And he finished it shortly before he died. And in fact, he never heard it performed. There's a story about how he was offered a chance to hear it, that people wanted to play it for him. But he said his health was declining and his hearing was going, and he didn't want to hear it badly. I think he'd rather hear it in his head than hear it, through the ears that weren't working as well as they once did. So for our performance, it will be performed by Sophie Till, who's our concertmaster of the orchestra, John Vida on violin, both of them on violin, Amy Iwazumi on viola, and Christiana Oppenheimer-Vida on cello. Again, wonderful musicians that we have in our orchestra. And then the concert ends with Bach's Orchestral Suite number 2. Each of Bach's 4 orchestral suites, he wrote 4 of them, they're all collections of French dances. And they have different collections and so on. But in this case, it's an overture, a rondo, a sarabande, a bourrée, a polonaise, a minuet, and a badinerie, which actually is not a very well-known dance. They're all dances. The badinerie is, I think, is known from a handful of examples, and this is one of them. And it's for orchestra and flute solo. And our wonderful flute soloist, who audiences, I mean, he plays just about every year or something, and we're very lucky to have him, is Ed Wargo. And so this, you know, again, features the flute on a number of these movements, and it's a wonderful and familiar piece. I think a lot of people will certainly know this orchestral suite. So it's going to be a great evening. I mean, it features a lot of different players who are all fabulous. So we're very lucky to, I'm lucky to get a chance to work with them on Sunday with the choral concert. But we're all lucky to get a chance to hear them play as part of this chamber concert on Saturday night. And so finally, we come to the choral concert, and we're working with sort of an evening theme, sort of a loosely constructed theme this time around. There's music from the Vespers service, which of course is an evening service. And there's music on themes of darkness and kind of the fall of night, which I thought those kind of connected in an interesting kind of way. The first piece we're doing is the Bach cantata that I mentioned earlier that connects with one of the pieces on the organ concert. This is cantata 6, Bleib bei uns, denn es will Abend werden, Stay with us for night is falling, is a translation of that. And the theme of this cantata is darkness is gaining the upper hand, and there's a lot of fear sort of that happening, and it's a plea for help and a plea for light in the face of gathering darkness. And it's funny, it's very anxious and fearful in a kind of way, and it's interesting to think it was written for Easter Monday. So I don't know, I'm not sure quite what to make of that, but he wrote it for the Monday right at the beginning of the Easter season. So in the first movement, you hear this plea, the Bleib bei uns, stay with us, and it's repeated over and over again by all the different parts. Sometimes the singer, sometimes the orchestra plays this in these long, sort of insistent notes. And it's trying to cut through, but sometimes almost overwhelmed by the very sort of thick counterpoint that is sort of swirling around in this opening movement. So it's this a really cool effect, I think, of this, like we're reaching out, trying to ask for help, but there's a lot going on that's making it really, in some ways, hard to do that and hard for that plea to be heard, almost. So it's a really, I think, a wonderful, wonderful opening movement. And then that's followed by an alto aria, a chorale movement for sopranos and cello solo, then a recitative for bass, and then a tenor aria. And the soprano, alto, and tenor movements all, in different ways, beg Jesus to be the light that the world needs. And the bass recitative is kind of this little mini sermon, and it sort of explains the reason why the darkness is, you know, so prevalent. And of course, the reason is that humanity has strayed from the paths of righteousness. Okay, so it's a very kind of in your face, you know, you are to blame, you people are to blame for this. And so then the implication is, of course, well, then walk on the paths of righteousness and everything will be fine. And the piece ends then with a final plea for light from the full chorus and orchestra. And it's a chorale, a Lutheran chorale setting. It sort of ends the cantata. And the movement for sopranos and cellos is particularly notable. I mean, this is the movement that was transcribed by Bach for organ as one of the Schubler chorales. But it has this virtuosic part for the solo cello, which was actually written for an instrument called the piccolo cello, like the little cello, which is an instrument that doesn't really exist anymore. So it's going to be played by Christiana Oppenheimer-Vida on the cello, and it's quite difficult to play, especially on the modern cello. So it's a very active solo part, which I think, you know, it's maybe dangerous to read too much into this, but maybe this is sort of representing the turbulence of the world, maybe the chaos of sort of how things are going badly. And then over that, the sopranos just sing this very simple, unadorned chorale melody, which maybe that's representing the light of God. You know, so you sort of have this contrast between the cello part and the soprano part. And it's this just amazing, amazing movement. And it works really well for us, but also works really well for organ. So that's the Bach cantata. Then we follow that up with the Rheinberger Abendlied, evening song, is a translation of that. And it actually has exactly the same text as the first movement of the Bach cantata. Bleib bei uns, denn es will Abend werden. Okay, again, stay with us for night is falling. And where Bach is anxious and maybe even desperate. Reinberger's setting is more about longing, I think, than fear. So it's an interesting, very different take on the same text. And it's absolutely gorgeous. It's this gorgeous six-part writing. And it's one of the amazing things about it is that it's one of his most famous pieces. If people know one piece by Reinberger, usually it's this piece. And it was written when he was 16. And he revised it, did things to it later. But, you know, he wrote this jewel of a... It's a little motet. It's not very long, but it's this jewel of a piece. And he wrote it when he was, you know, essentially just getting started as a musician. And it's just wonderful. It's one of my favorite little choral pieces. So, and, of course, it's a perfect fit for the concert. So we got it in there. Then the first half of the program finishes with Jan Dismas Zelenka's Magnificat in D major. Now, Zelenka is not particularly well known today. He was a Czech composer that worked primarily in Dresden, but he was very well known to Bach. And he's actually becoming better known. I'm sure WVIA has CDs by him in the collection here. But he was very well known to Bach, who not only knew his work, knew his compositions, but he knew him personally and was friendly enough with him that Zelenka stayed with Bach when he was visiting Leipzig. So, you know, clearly they had a pretty close relationship. We also know that Bach liked this piece, this Magnificat by Zelenka, so much that he had his son, Wilhelm Friedemann, copy out the last movement, the Amen, so that the choir at St. Thomas Church in Leipzig could use it. And of course, Bach, you know, directed this choir. So we know that he actually used this piece for the services in Leipzig, to the last movement of this piece. So, you know, what better reason to use this on our program? And Zelenka is a very inventive composer, and in some ways he's a little more experimental, maybe, than Bach. They're contemporaries, born about the same time. So this piece is in three movements, which is not that unusual. But the first starts out as this really joyful romp, but then right when the chorus comes in, the tempo immediately slows down, just no warning, just suddenly it's slower, and we get this short but very sort of expansive, slow introduction suddenly after the piece has already started. It slows down, and then more or less, I don't know, where it picks back up again and carries on where it left off. But it works. You know, it sounds kind of strange, but it works really quite well. You know, then we're back into this joyful romp, which then features a soprano soloist, which in this case, for our performance, is our guest soloist, who is Kelly Pleva. And then the second movement is, the form is maybe a little more conventional, no surprises like there are in the first movement, but it's this beautifully expressive, slow movement that features an alto soloist, which in this case is Kathy Brink, who is a longtime member of the chorale and a frequent soloist on the Bach Festival. And then the final movement, which is the Amen that Bach had his son copy, and it is a contrapuntal tour de force, which may be why Bach was attracted to it. So this is a piece that most people won't know, but I think that they'll love it. It's this wonderful piece, and Zelenka is definitely a composer who deserves to be better known, and hopefully our performance will do a little bit to help get his name out there just a little bit. So the second half of the program is Handel's Dixit Dominus. It was written when Handel was young. I mentioned that Reinberger was, you know, has this young piece. Well, Handel wasn't quite that young, but he was only 22, so that's still pretty young. So early on in his career, he went and took a tour of Italy to try and make his name. And at this point, when he wrote this piece, he was in Rome, and he's trying to impress people. And he first impressed them as a keyboard player. So he was a fabulous organist and a harpsichordist. And so that was sort of how he made his name at first. But he was also trying to show off his skills as a composer. But he had a bit of a problem. Before coming to Rome, he'd been going around Italy, and he was in Venice and Florence previously. And he'd had operas premiered in Venice and Florence, and they had gone very well. But opera at this time was banned in Rome. So he couldn't write opera. So instead, he wrote sacred music, but he incorporated some of the stylistic elements of opera into his sacred music. And the Dixit Dominus that we're doing was one of the results of this attempt to do this. And as I said, he's trying to impress people. He's trying to impress potential patrons. And so this is, it's a brilliant piece. It's very virtuosic for both the soloists and for the chorus. And it's quite an undertaking for us to do. It's an amazing piece, but it's quite difficult. So a little bit about it. The text of the Dixit Dominus comes from Psalm 110, which is one of the psalms that's traditionally sung as part of the Vespers service. We don't actually know, we don't have records of how this piece was premiered, but the sort of assumption is that there was a Vesper service, sort of, you know, grand service that was put on, and that this music was part of that. There would have been other things, of course, on the service, and in fact, some people have assembled things into, Handel didn't call it this, but the Carmelite Vespers is a name that has sort of been put on a collection of things by Handel, and this piece is part of that. So it's 8 movements, and it is full of energy, dynamic contrasts, harmonic inventiveness, and surprises, dramatic word painting. It's chock full of all kinds of things, which is exactly what you'd expect of a young composer trying to get attention. Much of it is fast and furious, which is in keeping with the martial nature of a lot of the text, but there are moments of repose. One of my favorite of those moments is the 7th movement, which of course comes right after the 6th movement. The 6th movement is brash, it's confident, it's a musical depiction of battle in a lot of ways. It talks about God's military strength, and it features the text, "He will pile up calamities and shatter heads in many lands." This is the 6th movement. And then in the 7th movement, the text talks about taking a drink from a stream. There's a sort of a pause, in a way, in the action. And Handel pauses, in a way, also. And we get this gorgeous duet for 2 sopranos. In this case, our guest soloist, Kelly Pleva and Lauren Kucha. So they sing this just beautiful duet filled with suspensions. And it's just gorgeous. And then in the background, the men sing this slow, reverent plain chant, which is, it's just this magical moment. It's just one of my favorite points in this piece, but also on the whole concert. It's just, I think it's a wonderful movement. And it's just, anyway, I'm looking forward to that part of the concert. I mean, the whole thing, of course, but especially that. And then after that, we get the final movement, which features more virtuosic counterpoint. Handel's really showing off at this point. And just when you think it's done and you think it can't get any more exciting, the tempo speeds up and it's off to the races, and it's just this incredibly dramatic ending. It's such fun to sing and fun, I think, to listen to. And it's quite a piece, and it made quite an impression on the Roman audience. So I should say, for this performance, our featured soloists are Martina Barna, Kathy Brink, Lauren Kucha, Becky Elfman, Linda Hickernell, George Lewandowski, Aileen Allsummer, Wes Poole, and our guest soprano, Kelly Pleva. So the 3 concerts of the Bach Festival. The first is the organ concert, again featuring James Kennerly. That is on Saturday, March 25th at 4 o'clock p.m. at Elm Park, United Methodist Church in Scranton. The chamber concert, chamber music concert, is that evening, Saturday, March 25th at 7:30 p.m. That is at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton. And then the choral concert is the next day, Sunday, March 26th at 3 o'clock p.m. That is also at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton.
Dr. Stephen Thomas, music director and conductor of the Arcadia Chorale, speaking with us about the 32nd annual Northeastern Pennsylvania Bach Festival this Saturday and Sunday, March 25th and 26th. The Bach Festival opens on Saturday afternoon at 4 with an organ concert at Elm Park United Methodist Church in Scranton, given by James Kennerly, organist and choir master at St. Ignatius of Antioch Episcopal Church in New York City. There will be music of Bach and Healy Willen and more. That concert is free and open to the public at Elm Park United Methodist Church, Saturday afternoon at 4. Saturday evening, March 25th at 7:30 at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton, members of the Arcadia Festival Orchestra will perform chamber music by Mozart, Fauré, and Bach. And as we heard, there will be a duo, a trio, a quartet, and then the orchestral suite number 2 with the full Arcadia Festival Orchestra and featured flutist Eduardo. The Bach Festival will conclude with a choral concert this Sunday, March 26th at 3 in the afternoon at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton. The Handel Dixit Dominus that we're hearing now is the culminating work. The program will include Bach's Cantata 6, Bleib bei uns, Stay with us, the Abendlied of Rheinberger, and also the Zelenka Magnificat in D major. Tickets will be available at the door, and seniors and WVIA members will receive a discount. And also the admission, as we said, to the organ concert is free. For more information on the web, arcadiachorale.org, arcadiachorale.org, the 32nd Annual Northeast Pennsylvania Bach Festival, Saturday and Sunday, and that's in Scranton. The opening concert at 4 and organ recital at Elm Park United Methodist Church, Saturday evening at 7:30. It's the chamber music concert with the Arcadia Festival Orchestra, and that's, again, at Covenant Presbyterian Church at 7:30 on Saturday. And the festival will conclude with the choral concert Sunday, March 26th at 3 at Covenant Presbyterian Church. For more information, on the web, arcadiachorale.org, arcadiachorale.org.